And there we go. So we're very happy to be here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And, of course, we bring you this show weekly, Tuesday, 10 to 11 a.m. But one of the wonderful things about the Gary Null Network, Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM, is that you can listen in any time, day or night. And we have a counter on the archive so that we can see where it's going in terms of how many people are listening into the archives. And we're very, very happy to report that we have over 134,000 listeners to our archives. So thank you, guys. We love to know that you are interested in these topics. Another thing you may want to know is that there is a search engine on the archive. So you can put in any topic you want. Let's say you're interested in thyroid health or arthritis or pain management or spiritual concepts or anything. You can put that in, and it will often be able to find it for you, or any specific doctor. Like, for instance, Nick Gonzalez, who unfortunately passed away just recently. Well, we have a fantastic show with him. And another doctor who just passed away, a holistic doctor, is Mitchell Gaynor. We have a show with him too. So those are going to become, you know, really, really wonderful archives of some of the most fantastic healers, particularly in the natural cancer medical field. And it's quite, I don't know, unusual, mysterious that over 11 holistic physicians have suddenly died very mysteriously, really within the last month or two, perhaps 6 weeks. I mean, one after another. I'm finding it upsetting, but also almost beyond belief that it could just be a coincidence. And I suggest you look into that. So there are two doctors right there, Dr. Nick Gonzalez and Dr. Mitch Gaynor, both who passed away under sort of mysterious circumstances. I think they found Mitch like in his backyard or something, some strange thing. Of course, I don't know all the details. And it's just something to consider. You may want to look into it and see what's going on with that. So, of course, life goes on, and if you do want to listen to Nick Gonzalez or Mitchell Gaynor's fantastic show right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, you can visit the archives and listen anytime. You can download them. You can share them with your friends, and you can hear fantastic words of wisdom from fabulous physicians who unfortunately we are no longer able to access their services, at least not in this part of the universe. So that's the sad news for today. But we have good news today as well, and that is that we have Mr. Thomas Ogren as our guest today. And we are going to interview Mr. Ogren. He holds a Master's of Science in Agriculture with an emphasis on horticulture, herbal forests, and plant flowering systems, and the connections between landscape plant materials and allergies. Tom started researching allergy-free gardening 25 years ago because all the women in his life, boy, they must have annoyed him, right? It's like his wife, his mother, and his sisters all suffered from hay fever and asthma. So he created the Ogren Plant Allergy Scale, OPALS, the first and only numerical plant allergy ranking system in existence, which is now being used by the USDA to develop allergy rankings for all major U.S. urban areas. Tom worked with the University of California Cooperative Extension to establish community gardens in the Los Angeles inner city and hosted the popular radio call-in garden show, Tom Ogren's Wild World of Plants. He continues to write for Garden Design, California Landscaping, The New Scientist, Organic Gardening, and a host of other publications. And on today's show, we will be discussing Tom's new book, beautiful book, The Allergy Fighting Garden. So thank you so much for joining us today, Mr. Ogren.
Well, thanks for having me, Ellen.
And I know you're over there on the West Coast, as we can see from your bio. So, you know, you had to get up a little early this morning to join us, so we appreciate it.
Oh, it's fine. It's going to be another hot day here today, and I got up at 6, and it was already about 75 degrees, but it's great. I'm fine.
Oh, well, good, and thank you for joining us. Now, we want to talk about your book, The Allergy Fighting Garden. When I first saw this book, I have to say I've been doing both herbal medicine and holistic medicine for, you know, close to 40 years each, and I never thought of those two concepts together. What do you mean by the allergy fighting garden?
Well, there are many plants in our landscapes that will trigger our allergies or asthma. And then there are other plants that are completely opposite, which are often female plants. And these plants don't produce any pollen, so they're 100% pollen-free. But besides the fact that they don't shed pollen, they're designed by nature to trap pollen. And so if you take a bush like a juniper bush or something, all of the junipers they're either all male or all female, every individual bush and or tree. And the female, her job, if you will, in nature, is to catch pollen from the males. So if your neighbor has a big towering juniper that's male, which is very common, that pollen may blow right into your yard. But if you have in between you and the neighbor, you have a female juniper, she will trap the pollen that comes in from the male, and thus she's actually an allergy-fighting plant. It's not just a passive thing. She's actually blocking pollen, stopping pollen, trapping it. She's protecting you. And hence, she's allergy fighting.
Okay, now, of course, she's not doing that trapping of pollen in order to protect humans from it. I mean, basically, that's a mating ritual between the trees, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. The second book that I wrote about the connections between allergies, asthma, and landscaping was in 2004, I believe, and it was called Safe Sex in the Garden.
And, oh, that's right. What does
that
mean?
Yeah, that even got me a spot on NPR and a editorial in the New York Times or something. But the reason I gave it that title was my dad said to me one day, he said, you know, he said, most people don't even know that plants have sex, much less that some of them are boys and some of them are girls. He said, you're going to have to kind of spell that out. Maybe you should put it right in the title of the book or something. We came up with that. But, the whole concept of safe sex in the garden is something that was pretty much I stumbled on. But it appears to be the key to how to develop landscapes that are totally allergy-friendly, that don't cause asthma or allergies. And it's completely possible. There are many plants like this. Whether it's not typical, it's just like, okay, you're an alternate medicine nurse, and you've been doing this a long time, and you study a lot of things that regular MDs and regular nurses may not study at all. And it's an alternate approach, and so. Like when I sent out this book to get blurbs earlier this year, the allergist for the biggest website with allergy MD in Europe wrote back, congratulations, the Allergy Fighting Garden provides an alternative and complementary approach to the management of respiratory allergy. Now, so basically, we're both in alternative fields here, but as we both know, just because it's alternative doesn't mean it doesn't make sense. It might make a lot of sense. But the point I think I'm trying to make is that it's traditional in horticulture to use male plants whenever possible, not to use females.
Okay, well, let's stop there.
Yeah,
why
yeah.
would it be more traditional in agriculture? And let me go back another spec a little bit more in terms of clarifying
yeah.
this for our listeners, because you're so familiar with it, it just rolls off your tongue, but perhaps they don't know. Now,
no,
from
I'm
my
sure.
understanding, in terms of plants, there are
yeah.
some plants that actually have a male plant and a female plant, such as ancient plants like ginkgo trees, but there are
mm-hmm.
other plants where that's not the case. One plant will be self-fertilizing or not necessarily have a whole different sex than another member of the same species. Is that true?
Oh, it's totally true. And in fact, there's 20 different flowering systems. But it gets too complicated for anybody but a botanist. So I normally only talk about three systems, dioecious, meaning like us, separate sexed, complete flowered, like a rose, where you've got male and female in the same flower, and what's called monoecious, meaning male and female flowers, separate ones, but on the same tree,
exactly.
like a birch tree, right.
Okay, so since we have those various
of
kinds of ways that plants can exist in terms of their sexuality and whether one would have pollen or not, then how do we choose specific ones for the garden since some of them we're not going to be able to separate?
Well, there's all different methods. For example, most of the perfect flowered things, and that would be like an apple tree or a rose. An apple and rose are actually related. These are complete flowered and perfect flowered, and the male and the female are in the same flower, and an insect like a honeybee only has to move the pollen maybe an eighth of an inch, and it will go from the male part to the female part and pollinate. And so that's not designed to put a lot of pollen in the air, and as a result, plants that are flowered like that usually don't cause allergies. There are some exceptions.
Okay, so wait a minute.
Yeah.
That's very interesting. So let's say plants, perhaps if we look at the family, like the Rosaceae family that many
yes.
of the fruit trees are in, as well as rose bushes, then they would not be an offender in terms of increasing allergies?
Normally not, if we're generally
okay.
speaking. But of course, I've been studying this for 30 years, and so I do plant by plant, species by species, and there are exceptions. So if you take like an almond tree is in the rose family, and yet it's not self-fertile, and the pollen from one tree has to go to another, and so the pollen gets in there, and so almond trees very typically cause allergies. There are a few other exceptions, but as a general rule, that's fine. But the problem with the general rules is that I try to break it down to what a person actually has grown in their own yard. And so if, say, you were living in California and you had a couple of almond trees in your yard, which would be nice maybe, but that pollen, even if they're in the rose family and they are complete flowers, they'd still be causing you allergies. And so
So it's like it's a guiding light. It's not an absolute rule. It can vary plant to plant.
Yes, that's true. But what is true with the separate sex plants, with the dioecious plants, and dioecious is Latin for two houses, just like you're a lady and I'm a man. All right, same with these with the dioecious plants, and there's a lot of those species used in landscaping. The propagators, the commercial horticulture people, have always preferred males. And so if we take a common street tree like a red maple, the USDA turned out over 100 different new types of red maple cultivars, or varieties, if you will. These are patented, grafted trees. And every single one that they released was a male. There was not a female in it. They produced a big silver maple tree, which they called Silver Queen. But the Silver Queen is a man, is a guy. It's a male. And it produced a lot of pollen. So even the names are they're fuzzy. You can't tell from the name. But the reason why horticulture put out so many of these male plants is that they are considered tidy. They're a male doesn't produce any seeds. It doesn't produce any fruits. It doesn't produce any pods that might fall on the sidewalk or something. And so horticulture saw this as, whoa, what a wonderful way. We give people a nice big tree, and we don't give them any mess, and everybody's happy. The problem was that by using the males, the job of the male plant is to produce a lot of pollen. And that pollen is designed, it has to go airborne in order to get to the female. The problem with the landscapes now, and I've seen this in 20 countries now, is wherever the landscaping is modern, is we have a preponderance of male plants and very few females. There are a few female species. I can't even find a single plant anymore. It's like they've disappeared.
Because of the overplanting of males to decrease fruit and pods and things like that falling to the ground from a cosmetic standpoint.
Right. Now,
that's why they've chosen more males.
Right.
So how are new plants made if they have only males available? Wouldn't they need females to propagate seeds when they want to, you know, have more plants of that species?
Well, it's a valid question. But, I mean, 100 years ago, most of the landscape plants were planted from seeds. But that's not the way they do it anymore. Now we have powerful rooting hormones. We have benches that are heated to a certain degree underneath. We have mist systems, and then we have even better, we have fogging systems. You can pretty near grow roots on a broomstick now in a modern greenhouse. And so almost all the woody plants, and this would be all our trees and shrubs, these are almost all grown asexually now, no sex, no seed. They're grown from either a graft or a bud or more likely from a cutting. And then they now have tissue culture. So they come up with a new tree that they like. They can tissue culture this, and in a matter of months, they can produce millions and millions of them. So
that's really not, they've sidestepped the need for the female plants in terms of reproducing new plants.
Right, exactly. And so the big problem always is the landscapes are too male, and it's often tricky to find the best females to trap the pollen. And hence you have to have rather precise information. And then to make it worse, you go to a nursery and you ask a typical person who hasn't ever read books like mine and that works at the nursery, and you ask them which of these are male and which are female, and they look at you like you're from outer space. They're like, what are you talking about? You know? And, I once, 20 years ago, talked on the telephone to the largest producer, or the manager, they're a large producer of yews, which are very, very common landscape shrub in the United States. And all of them are separate sex. And I said, they sold about 30 different kinds of them. I said, do you know which kinds that you sell are male and which are female? They didn't have a clue. They didn't seem to even notice that there was a difference. Now, from their point of view, it might not have been important, but from my point of view, it's 100% important, because if you put a bunch of these males around your house as a foundation plant, which is the way they use them, and they're male, they're going to produce all this pollen. The pollen will come right through your window screens. It will get on the dog. It'll get on the cat. It'll get on the kids. And it's not just allergenic, but with a U, it's also it's poisonous. It's toxic. And so very big difference. Now, if you looked at the female plant, you would see that she had berries on her, small berries that are green in the beginning and then become red. But
yeah, those red berries. Yeah, I see those often. Let's say hedges around different places when they use. They kind of have gummy exudate when you press on them.
Since I morphed into talking about yews, and since your show is out of New York, right, I should just mention for a second here that in the East Coast they use yews as foundation plants, and in the West Coast they use a cousin of yews, Podocarpus, and both of them, they're closely related. Both of them are entirely separate sexed. And both of them are used for chemotherapy drugs. And so the scientific name of yew, the genus, is Taxus, T-A-X-U-S. From Taxus, they get the chemo drug for breast cancer, Taxol. And this is a very powerful agent that cuts off all estrogen. And so I've had many different case studies, where I'm dealing with people who are having very strange health problems. No doctors are figuring it out. They've been to allergists. They're not figuring it out. They get me to come to their place, and I find all these male yews or male podocarpus, and in a place like right next to windows or right next to front doors or something. And the people are breathing this in year after year, and they're getting sicker and sicker. And a lot of the conditions look a lot like chemotherapy treatments. And basically, they're inhaling this pollen from these poisonous species. The pollen is allergenic, and that's not helping them. But it's also toxic. And the only thing that works in a case like that is avoidance. So that means we have to remove it. Now, I can replace it with a female, and boom, suddenly the people start getting well. There's
wow.
No pollen from
well,
that.
How
yeah,
could a person who's listening to our show and we're going to go for a break here shortly. We are listening to Thomas Ogren, and we're talking about his book, The Allergy Fighting Garden. He has another book called Safe Sex in the Garden. And we're going to take a little break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. But when we come back, I'd like you to perhaps tell people how can they check on their own yard and go outside and look and perhaps be able to tell if they in fact have a lot of male trees or female trees or plants, because I know it's something you can identify, and you've been great at giving us hints, like the female is going to get fruit on it every year, it's going to get berries where the male may not. So we will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of the Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss jojoba, the miracle plant of the desert.
Jojoba is spelled J-O-J-O-B-A, but is pronounced according to its Spanish origins. The jojoba plant grows in the American Southwest and the Sonoran Desert in Mexico. The jojoba is a large bush-like plant resembling mistletoe. It can reach a height of 15 feet and can live from 100 to 200 years. The Sonoran Indians have used the oil pressed from the jojoba beans for centuries. Father Juniper Serra, founder of 21 missions in California, noted in the early 1700s that the local Indians were using jojoba oil for treating sores, cuts, bruises, burns, and as a diet supplement, to soothe skin from sun and wind burns, as a cooking oil, and even as a beverage.
The importance of jojoba as a cash crop was proclaimed in 1935, but it was not until 1974, when the killing of sperm whales was banned, that the government began to study jojoba oil in depth as a substitute for whale oil. The National Academy of Sciences concluded jojoba oil has a radically different chemical structure than any other known oil. Most oils break down or turn rancid. Jojoba, on the other hand, is hypoallergenic, non-toxic, never turns rancid, and does not break down even under high temperature and pressure.
The University of California at Riverside did a study where they cooked 27 batches of popcorn in the same heated jojoba oil. The last batch was just as perfect as the first. These unusual properties are unique to jojoba oil because, chemically speaking, jojoba oil is not really an oil at all, but is a liquid wax. Its composition is almost identical to sebum, which is the oil secreted by human sebaceous glands to help to protect the skin from the environment.
Jojoba has a myriad of usages. The cosmetic industry takes advantage of its compatibility to human skin by adding it to shampoos, conditioners, moisturizers, and many other cosmetic products. In medicine, jojoba can be used directly on rashes, cuts, and psoriasis. It may also be used as a lubricant for artificial hearts. Jojoba contains a natural appetite suppressant, which can be used in weight loss products. It has no known side effects. In industry, jojoba is known to be a superior engine lubricant and will cause a car to run 20 to 30 degrees cooler when added to the crankcase oil.
So, if you are interested in a miracle plant from the desert, reach for jojoba in your natural medicine chest.
Join myself and Dr. Z in person, and we have ongoing classes. You can find out more at naturalnurse.com schedule. You can also reach us at The Natural Nurse on Facebook, so either naturalnurse.com or The Natural Nurse on Facebook. And we have a lot of classes, like we give a class in Chinatown where we actually visit Chinese medical doctors, as well as learning about tongue and pulse diagnosis. We do Qigong in the park, and we go underground to a special FDA-approved factory where they make Chinese medicine. So very, very interesting. We also have outside herbal identification and medicine-making workshops where we gather plants, and you go home with your own tincture, salve, smudge sticks, and other herbal products that you learn to make yourself in the field. And we have those ongoing for the next date. Just look at naturalnurse.com schedule. And today we have as our guest Mr. Thomas Ogren, and he has many wonderful books that he's written. The one we're talking about today is The Allergy Fighting Garden. And he has another book called Safe Sex in the Garden. And actually, they are related, as he has been sharing with us today. So welcome back to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, Mr. Ogren.
Oh, it's great to be here with you this morning.
Now, you've been explaining to us the fact that the overriding message here is that male plants are more linked to causing pollen allergies than female plants. Right? That's the bottom line message?
Well, that's the bottom line, but I would say it's a lot stronger than that. Female plants are not linked to causing any allergy and never have been. They don't cause allergies.
Wow, that is?
All right, it's 100%. The female sheds no pollen. The female traps pollen. The male produces pollen. So while we were on break, I was listening to this advertisement on your show for jojoba oil, which is a wonderful product. And jojoba is a plant that grows out in the desert in the United States, and it's native, and the oil is beautiful. But it's also a separate-sex plant. So one jojoba plant is female and makes those beautiful jojoba nuts from which they get the oil. Another one is a male plant that never produces a nut and just produces pollen. And if you go visit where they grow jojoba, they only need one male for every 50 females. Now, if you take the jojoba plants and they grow them from seed, then the males, they don't need all those males, and they're wasting space. They sell the males to the nurseries who sell them for landscaping plants in Arizona and New Mexico and Texas or something. So if you have a jojoba plant and it never makes any seeds, well, poof, you got a male and you've got an allergy-causing plant. That was the question you asked me before we went
on
break.
Yes, that's what we wanted to lead in. So let's say people are listening and it's a new concept to them, this whole idea. And, of course, you set up a full OPALS system, which is now recognized by the USDA, but I bet a lot of people have never heard this information before. If they want to run outside and see if their plants outside are male or female, how would they do that?
Well, the first thing would be to look for some kind of seeds or berries or fruits on the plant. And if there's none, and they never saw any on it ever, well, the chances are extremely good that's a male plant. And if that's the case, then that plant will produce a lot of pollen, and that plant will cause allergies. If we're talking about the separate sex plants and you find so much as one fruit on it, well, then you don't have to worry about it because it's female. And the problem is that they sell so many males now.
How would you go to a nursery and request female plants? Because, as you said, most of the nursery workers really won't know what you're talking about.
Right. You know, a lot of people, and I've been at this a long time, a lot of people, they will take my first book on this subject, which is close to 20 years ago now, is Allergy-Free Gardening. And that topic did not exist before I wrote that book. And the people, they take the book with the nursery to them. I mean, if they go to a really good nursery, the nursery will have the book and the people there will have read it, but say they haven't. And certainly if you go to, like, Home Depot or Walmart or something, nurseries, they're not going to know. But so say you were looking for a red maple tree and you found a red maple tree and it said Indian Summer was the tag on it, right? And you looked in the book and it said red maple hybrid Indian Summer Opals 1. Well, 1 is the best. That means allergy-free. That means it's a female tree. And if you looked at another tree that looked just like it and was sitting right next to it and it said red maple hybrid celebration, that would have a Opals 9 on it, meaning it was a male, meaning you didn't want it, because Opal scale runs 1 to 10. 1 is best, most allergy-free. 10 is the worst.
Now, that's very interesting, because I want to talk about that a little bit more. So you developed this Opals system. This ranks trees and bushes and plants, I imagine, for their allergenicity. The ranking is 1 is the least allergenic and 10 is the most.
Yes.
And are these actually marked in regular mainstream nurseries?
No, but there are some nurseries now that are starting to sell plants with Opals tags. And that is one of my major aims. And so there's nurseries in the southeastern states that are doing it now, and there's nurseries in Europe are doing it, and we're hoping that it'll grow. So, by the way, if a person wanted to get on the computer and look up Opals, I think all they have to do is put in OPALS, Opals Allergy, and it'll come up right away on Wikipedia. And there's a very good description of Opals on Wikipedia, which I did not write, but someone from Google wrote, actually. Since I last talked to you, I gave a talk at Google, Ellen. That was kind of an interesting thing. But anyhow, the thing about Opals is your average person can't remember all these numbers, and often I can't remember them myself. It's one of the reasons I write things down. But in order to get these numbers, I develop a set of criteria where I have a potential 147 different criteria, which I can number crunch on a computer and come up with a Opals number. And so I have all sorts of different factors. If the plant causes contact skin allergy, that's an important thing. If the plant blooms for a long, long time and sheds pollen, that's an important thing. That there's, if the plant is not attractive to insects or something, that's an important negative. That all these different factors get crunched into there. And then the reason I came up with opals was that every time I would explain what I was doing to people, most people didn't have a background in botany or horticulture. A lot of it, they just simply weren't really understanding. And so I thought, well, you know, if I made it simple, if I allergy ranked everything 1 to 10, everybody understands 1 to 10, I would just make it easier for them. By the way, for something I wanted to toss in case we have botanists here who are listening and they're going, oh, he's exaggerating things. I originally talked about three different flowering systems, dioecious, monoecious, and perfect flowered. And a lot of plants are monoecious, meaning they're not all just one sex, but the flowers are separate, such as a birch tree or oak tree. But they're in horticulture, they have learned how to take a tree like that, that in nature always has both, and turn it into a male. So if on the East Coast you have what's called like honey locust trees. Now, if you look at those out in the forest in, say, well, Alabama, every one of those trees will have long seed pods on it, on the female branches. But the male branches will be bare. They just produce pollen. But in horticulture, they only took the cuttings off of the male branches, and so they produced hundreds of thousands of these honey locust trees now that are all male. Now, in nature, that creature doesn't even exist. On the West Coast, you take these tall, skinny Italian cypress trees. They used to be grown from seed, and they had male and female on the same tree, but not the ones that you buy in a nursery now. They've been grown from cuttings off the male branches, and so they become a separate sex plant in the nursery, not in nature. But so it's not really just about the separate sex plants. It's also about the ones that horticulture has manipulated. In the last couple of years, I've seen plants like which are not separate sex, like begonias, where they're now turning out begonias that are all male. I hate to see this sort of trend, and I'm doing my best to try to nip it in the bud, but mostly I'm interested from a personal standpoint. That's how I got into it myself. I wanted to create a landscape where I could cocoon my wife. My wife Yvonne has very bad allergies and asthma, and her asthma typically would get triggered when her allergies were the worst. And so I wanted a yard where nothing in it was going to be producing a lot of pollen that would get Yvonne sick. And there's a concept in allergy study called proximity pollinosis. And what it means is the closer you are to the source, the greater your exposure. So what does that mean? That means if your kid in your schoolyard is full of allergenic trees, you're right next to the source, you're going to get the pollen. If it's in your own yard, you're going to get it because you're the closest to that source. And so what I'm always trying to do is make the immediate proximity as allergy-friendly as possible, as allergy-fighting as possible, so that people can get a break, because it's not a little bit of pollen that ever caused a problem. It's always a massive overdose, and it's all a question of dose or exposure. And
Is there actually documentation showing that the degree of allergies have increased with the increased planting of the male trees?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you look at the United States, at when I was a boy, the street tree was the American elm, and it was perfect flowered and insect pollinated, and it caused a certain amount of allergy just because it was so common, but not a lot, and it only bloomed for a certain period of time in the spring. The Dutch elm disease in the 60s and early 70s swept from the United States from east coast to west, and it killed off those elms, and the elms got replanted with these modern cultivars, these male trees, and all the ash trees planted, for example, 100% were male, and so on. And these were planted, and then it took about 10 years for them to mature. And so you can track the allergy, and the phenomena of Dutch elm disease started on the East Coast and took a decade to get to California. If you track the allergy asthma rates during that same period of time, you see that they were, at a certain point, they were almost twice as high on the East Coast. And then eventually the West Coast caught up with them, and at all times, everything increased. Asthma and allergy are now considered epidemic, and I'm sure you already know that. But, I mean, when I started studying this, less than 10% of the population had any kind of allergies, and now it's more around 40%. So it's increased about four times since I've been working on this. But and it continues to increase, and if people don't start to landscape smarter, it'll just get worse and worse. And so I'm always trying, when I get on the radio or something, I'm always trying to make appeal to people to be civic-minded and to do something more than just their own yard. And so I'm involved with, like, nonprofit groups that are trying to make this happen on a bigger level. So, for example, the most exciting thing right now that I see on the horizon is in Ontario, Canada, next month they're going to introduce a bill in the House. The Speaker of the House is very interested in it, that wants to make allergy-fighting gardens mandatory at all the schools in Ontario. This is thousands of schools. The first thing they'll do will be to outlaw any more male trees or shrubs to be planted in any of those schools. Now, right away, that will start to make a difference. And a very, very important thing, it'll affect hundreds of thousands of people, and in a good way. There's no negative to having a plant in your yard that's not producing pollen. It's a good thing. Particularly, there's no negative.
You're saying that they look just as nice. The only downside might be if somebody doesn't like fruits or seeds falling on their driveway for a couple weeks.
Right. I would also say, okay, so I'm a bit of a naturalist. I'm very interested in all things natural, native, wild. I'm a birder. I've got 747 species of birds on my list right now. These sterile landscapes that are male, where you go down a street and every tree is male, which is very common, They don't produce any food for wildlife, and so there's not a single fruit for a wild bird to eat. There's nothing for a chipmunk or a squirrel to eat. There's not even, because the pollen they produce is airborne pollen, they don't even produce pollen or nectar for the insects, and so we're getting problems with the ecology of it all because of so many things. I mean, butterflies used to feed on the nectar and the pollen, the little bits of pollen in those perfect flowered elm tree flowers, but that whole food source disappeared when Dutch elm disease killed off all of our elm trees. And so if we replace them with a sterile male that just produces wind-borne pollen, suddenly there was no food for the birds, no food for the butterflies, and so on, but a bigger problem for us.
Well, hold on with that thought, and we're speaking here with Thomas Ogren. Very important topic, the allergy-fighting garden. Find out what sex your plants are and move towards having either mixed or absolutely female-oriented plantings. Very interesting concept. We will be right back with more. We're going to take a little break right here and listen to some other show announcements that you can listen to either live or on the archives anytime 24/7 right here on Progressive Radio Network. We'll be right back with more.
Stay tuned to PRN.FM for more empowering ideas from progressive voices. We're moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
This is Guy McPherson. Join me and Mike Sleva with Nature Bats Last Radio on PRN.FM. Catch us Tuesday evening at 8 p.m. on the East Coast. You can rate the show on iTunes, and if you don't catch us live, you can catch us 24/7 in the PRN archives. That's 8 p.m. Eastern Time with Nature Bats Last on PRN.FM.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Normally, you would hear the Progressive Commentary Hour Monday evenings, 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. However, as of today, we're going to be having it every Tuesday, 7 to 8 p.m. So just change your calendar, please. Change your schedule. Tuesday, 7 to 8 for the Progressive Commentary Hour.
Hi there, this is Harvey Wasserman. I am the host of the Solartopia Green Power Wellness Show, which airs every Monday at 3 p.m. at PRN.FM. We cover the great issues of your health and wellness, of the health and wellness of the planet, of moving ahead towards a Solartopian, green-powered, holistic Earth. Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
Listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
And welcome back to more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. I want to reintroduce our guest, Mr. Thomas Ogren, author of many books, including the new one we're talking about today, The Allergy Fighting Garden. This might be a new concept to you. I know it was to me when I read this book, even after so many years being involved in plant medicine and in allergy therapeutics for patients, which actually natural medicine has many great answers for. I was really surprised to find this connection. And Mr. Thomas Leo Ogren has a master's in agriculture and horticulture, and he taught horticulture in Los Angeles, worked for the California Extension in California, and owned a dairy farm and retail wholesale nursery way back in northern Minnesota, and also hosted his own weekly radio show on public radio called Tom Ogren's Wild World of Plants. And he has a long history of activity in this field and is really the top professional, and has created a scale called OPALS, O-P-A-L-S, which is a plant allergy ranking system. And I imagine, Mr. Ogren, you would like people to ask their nurseries to start getting plants that are on this ranking scale from 1 to 10, 1 being the least allergenic and 10 being the most.
Absolutely. I would also, for any people that are in the nursery business that are out there, I would love to talk to you if you'd like to get involved in it. For any horticulture teachers or something, I am totally open. I answer all my own emails. I get hundreds of emails every day, and I have for years, and I answer them all myself, which takes a lot of time. But for cities that want to do something different, I'm totally available to everybody to help on this and explain it and get them going on it for people that want me to come and lecture. I've lectured all around the world about this, and I continue to do so. But I would also say that I'm to find me, if you simply look up Tom Ogren allergies on Google or Yahoo or something, you can't miss me. I'm all over the internet. But I would also say that there's all sorts of other things that are caused by this often, and or triggered by it, that are not on people's radar. So, for example, last week I read a very good paper about case studies of severe back pain that was directly linked to pollen allergies. When the allergies got better, the trees stopped blooming, the backache went away. things like ADHD and ADD and dyslexia and other odd learning disabilities, headaches, all manner of different types of symptoms happen to people who have allergies. There's a huge amount of stuff about food allergies, but people don't understand that the pollen allergies cross-react with food allergies. And so
that's an interesting concept. Tell us more about how pollen allergies cross-react with food allergies.
Right. So if you have say you take a tree like a birch tree. The birch tree has pollen that has an allergen in it that is a certain shape, in this case, odd rounded shape. Any food that also has a potential allergen in it that has the same shape, and this would include melons, apples, kiwi fruit, just the whole host, peaches, plums, all kinds of watermelons. Every time you eat that, your body recognizes that sign, that little shape, and even though these plants aren't even remotely connected, and it then gives an erroneous trigger that it's an allergen, and so you get your mouth gets numb, or you get a bellyache, or some odd thing from eating the food that seems fine. Well, the problem was that you've now got a developed birch allergy, and even if you're old and you've never had an allergy doesn't mean you can't get it. I met a guy at a talk who was 80 years old, and he had the largest chrysanthemum collection in the United States, and he suddenly become allergic to chrysanthemums, which is what happens because overexposure over a period of time is how you get the allergies in the first place. But there are hundreds of different connections between cross-reactivity and food allergies. So there are all these different pollen allergies that say these plants are growing right in your own yard, and you're getting exposed to them all the time, the odds eventually of getting a food allergy to them are very good. And if your children are growing up in that, then much bigger chance for the children to get it. Or if even worse, if the kids are going to schools that are landscaped with these type of plants, and there's going to be a lot of food allergies in that school. I'm extremely interested in re-landscaping schools, and I've been involved in lawsuits about this and successfully, where we've been able to remove the most allergenic plants out of a school landscape and replace them with female plants. And just like that, we stop that exposure. I mean, if a person, if every time that you eat ice cream, you get a bellyache, I mean, and if you're smart, you stop eating ice cream. But and that's called avoidance therapy. It's you know that. It's the oldest therapy in the world. And so what I'm saying is, like, if modern horticulture has made it very possible for you to surround yourself with a lot of allergenic plants, and horticulture doesn't want to tell you about this because they're making money on it, suddenly I stumbled on this 30 years ago and it explored it ever since. And I'm saying that you can make yourself healthier by surrounding yourself with plants that are not doing that, plants that are allergy fighting it, and at the schools for your children, that's just crucial. We can't just keep getting allergy rates that are getting worse and worse each year. It's a terrible situation, and it
there's a lot more information in your book. One thing I do want to share with people is that you do have a very, very extensive and easy to reference list of plants in the book, The Allergy Fighting Diet, with your score. So let's say something is a 7. Well, that's going to be high. And you have every plant listed, and you do list the number in terms of how allergenic it might be. So that's very helpful if people want to start a new planting around their house.
Right. You know, I was talking about what they're doing with all the schools in Ontario. All the schools in Ontario, when they switch over to allergy-friendly landscapes, it'll all be opals-based. They will be using that score. So they will be looking for plants that are low in the number, 1 to 5 perhaps, and stop planting the higher numbered plants. Even in California, where I live, the Department of Public Health has now got interested in this, and I helped draft something called the Strategic Plan for Asthma for 2015 to 2018. And in that, they call for opals-based landscaping in all public places, and in particularly in all the schools. And this, you know, maybe 20 years from now, this will be very common. But right now, Ellen, it's not common. And probably 9 out of 10 of the listeners that are listening to us today didn't even know about this before. But I don't have a big corporation behind me. Modern horticulture, for the most part, is not fond of my work. The big tree growers don't like what I have to say and so on, because they've got billions of dollars wrapped up in these patented male trees and shrubs. So it's a difficult to get the message out to the world.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being our guest today. This was Thomas Leo Ogren. We're actually coming to the end of our show. And some of his books include Safe Sex in the Garden. That's a great name. The Allergy Fighting Garden. And do you have a website, or do you think Googling your name is the best way to find out more, Mr. Ogren?
I'm connected with a couple of websites. One is safegardening.org, O-R-G. It's a nonprofit. And the other one is And the other website is allergyfree-gardening.com. But really, if my last name is O-G-R-E-N, if they put in Tom Ogren allergies or Tom Ogren trees or whatever, Tom Ogren pollen, it'll come up.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being our guest. It's a brand new topic for me. How about you, listeners? I'd like some feedback about this. Is this something you all know about? Because we love to bring you information. And I would say cutting-edge information, except that Tom's been doing this for decades, but it's still new information for me. And I just love learning, and we'll certainly take steps to be sure any plantings that we do here are either just female or balanced between male and female. I want to thank you so much. You can find out more at naturalnurse.com, Facebook, The Natural Nurse. Until next time, this is Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse. You the best. Stay healthy.